Oscar G. To Miss Houston.
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you. And you may proceed.
May it please the court. Most American-based protection order cases involve two different accounts of one event. The trial court is then tasked with determining which of the two accounts is most credible. Now, this case is different. In this case, the sole event articulated in the petition was recorded. It was introduced as evidence and was available for review by the district court. Therefore, the decision before the district court was more a matter of whether or not the conduct demonstrated on the recording was abuse, as defined by the Protection from Domestic Abuse Act. Now, to constitute abuse under the Act, it requires a household member to attempt to cause bodily injury, to intentionally or knowingly cause bodily injury, or to place by means of credible threat another person in fear of bodily injury. The respondent's violent conduct was not reasonable or moderate discipline of a child. It was abuse as defined by the Act, and it warranted entry of domestic abuse protection order. Now, the district court provided three specific findings in its award.
What is our standard of review?
It's no longer record, Your Honor. But in this case, I would say that there's no deference to the finding of the district court because the evidence of the Act that was abuse is on the record and available for the court to review itself.
The Act was breaking down the door.
Your Honor, the Act, I would say, it was a combination, really, of steps. Different steps culminating in one big violent act. He threatened his daughter. He chased his daughter into her bedroom.
Threatened
to hurt her in some way. It's not really clear on the record. The testimony came from the petitioner, the adult petitioner, who said that her daughter told her that the father said he was going to come after them, he was going to be violent with them, and that's why they ran. It is hearsay, but it wasn't in on the record.
Is hearsay reliable?
In this case, there was no evidence saying that it didn't happen. The daughter was not the child at issue in this case, but the other daughter, Emily, was asked whether or not she recalled it, and she said she didn't recall it. She didn't know either way. She didn't remember either way. So, although I would agree hearsay is not the most reliable option, it is entered on the record. There was no objection to it. And there was no contrary evidence saying that it did not occur.
Just because something is offered and accepted doesn't mean a prior fact has to believe it, does it?
I understand, Your Honor. I agree. In this case, though, I don't think one word
involves the difference, I think, is just... Is deference different here because it was recorded?
I think because it is de novo, I think the court can look at the record the recording, and see what happened for itself and get an impression of the evidence. And that's basically the recording. It's basically what this whole case is about. Whether or not what happened on the recording constitutes abuse under the Act.
Even under the record standard, where credibility determinations are an issue, we do know deference, correct?
Correct.
And are there some credibility determinations at issue in this decision, or would you argue there are none?
I would argue not. I would argue that it really comes down to the video recording. Further, there was no testimony from the victim child at issue in this case to contradict the evidence that's on the recording of how the child responded and what occurred.
Well, there was no testimony by the victim child at all, so...
No, Your Honor.
What's the evidence, then, that the child reasonably feared?
I do believe that reasonable fear is only a requirement under the Act as to a credible threat of physical or a bodily injury. And I would argue in this case that there was both bodily injury and an attempt at bodily injury, which means fear is not necessary. But I think on the recording,
what was the bodily injury?
The pain, Your Honor. I believe there was not testimony to that.
But marks?
There was no marks.
Bruising?
There was no bruising.
Because medical treatment received?
There's no medical treatment received.
What do you think the video showed?
videos in terms of bodily contact.
I think the video shows the respondent drawing his hand back and hits his daughter repeatedly after lunging on top of her. You can hear audibly his hand hit her, and you can hear her response. You can hear her crying. Now, I think it's not, I think it's reasonable for a court to interpret that there was some pain involved.
Is pain sufficient, or is pain something distinct from injury?
Bodily injury is not defined under the Act, or in a case law that I have found. I would argue that because of the fact that this is not a criminal case, that this is an injunctive, civil injunction, and the nature of the Act, that this is a stopgap put in place to protect children, that it should be, the term bodily injury should be construed broadly.
So, if a parent spanks a child, and the child experiences pain, every child that's spanked and experiences pain is going to be entitled to a protection order. Then how do you, what's the distinction here? And how do you justify it in the law?
I would actually go to the case cited by my colleague in his reply brief, Papa V. Cruz. It is a 115-year-old case, and it puts forth a moderate and reasonable standard, and although this was 115 years ago, and certainly the standard has evolved, I think that's a reasonable standard in this case. I think moderate and reasonable physical discipline or physical correction of a child is reasonable. I do not think spanking a child should warrant a protection order.
So how did you just get away with your argument that pain alone is sufficient?
Because I think that you can interpret that as a defense. But I think we have to look at whether or not the actions leading up to this are moderate and reasonable. I think that discipline of an unruly 10-year-old who's acting out and physical discipline choosing to spank a child should not be enough to warrant a protection order. However, in this case, a situation where somebody chases a child, whether or not we want to say that there's
evidence that she chased the child, and the video doesn't show the chasing, it shows the door being kicked in, and then Oscar G being on top of the child and striking the child.
I believe the testimony of the older child, Emily, is that she and her sister ran into the bedroom and locked the door to get away from their father after Leslie, the child issue in this case, broke her brother's iPod accidentally by throwing a toy. And so they had just run into their room, locked the door, went to their respective beds. That's when Emily took out her phone to record the event. Now this was something unusual, this was something scary for her that she chose to record her father as he banged on the door and then literally broke the door in half to access his daughter. He didn't come into the room and then start talking to his daughter and say, you can't lock the door, you can't do this, I'm concerned about your behavior. He came in, he jumped on top of her bed, and started hitting her repeatedly while yelling puta. A puta is a bitch or a whore, or a puta madre, if it's hard to tell on the record, which is motherfucker, essentially, excuse my language. And I don't think that's moderate or reasonable. I think that is abuse, as intended under the Protection from Domestic Abuse Act.
Bodily injury, the answer to this may be obvious, but does it include psychological injury?
You know, in the way it's been interpreted, I would say not. But I certainly think that there is an element of psychological injury here as well. But I think if we just focus on pain, or marks and bruises, etc., I think it does meet that requirement here. I think the court can reasonably interpret from the recording of what happened that there was pain.
Have we heard about psychological injury in the context of a misdemeanor?
I am not familiar with holdings in that regard, Your Honor. I do think we have to look at the purpose of the Protection from Domestic Abuse Act. This is not a criminal case. This is not even a custody case. This is intended to be a stopgap provision to come in and look at whether or not there was abuse as defined by the Act, defined broadly, and if there was, to put in a measure to protect this child.
How does the fact that this is a stopgap provision relate to the fact that the child apparently there's a stipulation that she's no longer afraid? their training component, because it seems that the credible threat subsection would be designed to step in and stop abuse before it happens. Here, there's a stipulation on the record, correct, that she is no longer afraid.
There was a stipulation that she was afraid at the time this event occurred of her father, but not Mary Finch.
Mary Finch.
Thank you. But not presently. And I think we have to look at the fact that this is a 10-year-old child. It's not reasonable to expect a 10-year-old child to be able to judge what the level of risk is, or to be able to articulate her fear, or even decipher her fear, especially when it comes to the abuse conducted by a parent. It's also not the current practice of Nebraska courts to require testimony of fear by a minor child. Protection orders are entered all the time on behalf of children who do not testify or who are not able to verbalize their fear. So it's not always a requirement, and I don't think it should be put upon a 10-year-old child that they have to provide that testimony, especially when there's evidence on the record, like in this case, a recording that demonstrates what occurred.
Aren't most of those orders every day that you speak about unopposed?
I would say it happens in opposed cases of Florida, Your Honor.
Do you have a citation you want to?
I do not offhand. I apologize.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chipman. Good morning to you.
May it please the Court, my name is Dave Chipman, representing the appellee Oscar Garcia in this case. This case, the appellee mentioned the standard review is de novo. However, as Justice Pavlik mentioned, I believe that the credible evidence is still, finding the credible evidence is still referred to the trial judge, where the court considers the fact that this judge, trial judge, saw the evidence, weighed the evidence.
Where is credibility coming here?
Credibility comes in many ways. For instance, one key piece of testimony came from Emily Garcia, who is a 12-year-old daughter of Mr. Garcia, and also the sister of Leslie Garcia, and Emily is actually the one who's filming all this. And so, Emily is an eyewitness the entire time. And so what Emily says is that she was afraid for her sister, but she wasn't afraid that she was going to get in more trouble. She wasn't ever afraid for her safety. I think it's the key piece of this, is that there was never any fear for her safety. Mr. Garcia struck his daughter, it appears, 5 times on the leg. It caused no type of injuries to her. There's no marks, there's no bruising of any sort. That was verified by the Creek Police, who appeared, I believe, the day of, which was June 3rd of 2017. And again, I think some other testimony, other evidence is that was the notion that she was afraid. Again, we're talking about Leslie, so that she was afraid at the moment, but she is not afraid of her father. And so if someone's, is causing you harm, causing bodily injury, you're going to be afraid of them. I mean, that makes no sense.
It's difficult to judge the credibility of it happening.
It is difficult.
Stipulations.
It is wrong, absolutely. It is absolutely very difficult. But the parties are, free to call the child. And so the appellate, in this case, made the determination to make a stipulation. And so that was what the record was. But I think a key factor is also Emily's testimony and also what the judge saw on the video. Not only that, they offered the police reported the evidence, I think it was Exhibit 3, and their recount of what they saw on the video. And again, there's a photograph of the child's leg, and there's some injuries. What they call it. Also,
what do you think is the key piece of evidence here, the video?
And I think maybe the video is a large part of the case. However, I think that what gives context to the video is the testimony of the 12-year-old child.
Does the video incorporate speech?
Your Honor, I have not watched the video. Mr. Lonzoni has obviously watched the video. I'm not aware if it incorporates speech or not. I know the police report does not account for anything that related to speech. And also, from what I've
heard... So the answer is you don't happen to know that the video does or does not contain speech by your client. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. So that's unclear. It does not appear, though, that there was any kind of threat to the child, that, that Mr. Garcia actually threatened the child, that he was going to harm her.
What, in your view,
evidence show that of what your client was doing or attempting to do?
Well, the claim was made to him was discipline a child, is discipline, and I think his main actions were what I would consider demonstrative.
Could you use a word different than discipline? Can you give us some facts of what he attempted to do?
Well, as a parent, I believe he was trying to assert his dominion over the child to ensure the child knew that blocking his
voice. Was he attempting bodily harm?
Yeah, I think absolutely not. And there's no evidence that he was actually attempting bodily harm. He struck on the leg, he wanted harm, or he struck on the face, or somewhere else. But also the force.
But your argument doesn't include that he may or may not have said things at that time. Because you're not in a position to tell the court that he did or did not say things associated with his conduct. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I'm not, as far as the video goes, I'm not, Your Honor. I do believe, though, that Emily's testimony was that he didn't say anything other than he was yelling and screaming at her to open the door.
A person certainly could attempt to injure someone by hitting them on the leg.
Absolutely.
And the district court made no reference to the attempt language of the first subsection.
Right.
What do we have to look at? But isn't that something we have to consider? What is an attempt to impose bodily injury?
I think you have to consider, but I also think you have to consider the fact that this trial judge saw the evidence, talked to the witness, one of the witnesses, Emily, who was, you know, he was there the entire time, and also have to consider the fact that this judge saw my 5'7", 230-pound client.
But the trial judge made no finding in its order either way about attempts. It says there's three things, and the first is no evidence of bodily injury, but there's no reference to whether there was an attempt to impose bodily injury.
Right, there is no mention of it, but again, I think that based upon the circumstances, it was reasonable for her to just know that this Mr. Garcia did not attempt to harm the child because, given this size and child size, if he wanted to harm the child, he wouldn't have to attempt, he would just do it. And so, you know, there's...
Can you explain that?
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, he had free access to the child. There was nothing restraining him from the child. And so if his intentions were to actually cause bodily injury to the child, there was no one there to stop him. And so he struck the child on the legs, causing no injury whatsoever. If his intention was to cause her harm, bodily injury, he could have easily done so given his size. I mean, the judge actually put eyes on this man. He's not a small person. And so there was, you know, no evidence that he intended to cause her bodily injury. In fact, he did not cause her bodily injury.
There's no finding with respect to the attempt.
There is no finding, no specific finding, Your Honor, regarding attempt. That's correct.
The section 28.14.13
findings. So, 28.14, the court did take judicial notice of this, Your Honor. It is a criminal statute. However, what the Supreme Court said in the Quarantra case is that this is a restatement of the common law, of the civil common law. And as the appellate mentioned in her argument, is that the 1903 case, which was actually taken judicial notice of without objection at that hearing, is the common law, which is that a parent can use physical discipline on their child. And this case
of... How is that applicable to a civil protection order case?
So it's only applicable in the sense that 28.13 is a restatement of the common law, which applies to civil cases. And so what would have been more ideal for the court to cite the 1903 case? Yes, Your Honor, absolutely would have been. However, I think the court that those in the case that they say that must be proved that the punishment was maliciously inflicted. And so I don't believe there's any evidence whatsoever that this...
We're not proceeding under 28.14.13. Do you agree?
I would agree that is not the statute that applies to civil proceedings.
Criminal law is statutory.
That's correct, that's wrong.
Okay. So we're back up there, 42.903.
We're at 903, yes, Your Honor. However, nevertheless, I do believe that the common law does apply to 43.903. And, you know, it would not be reasonable for someone to go and, you know, physically discipline, you know, someone else's child or a stranger, but under our common law, it is considered to be reasonable that a parent can use physical discipline against their child. I think that it's becoming less and less common. I'm guessing most of the justices here, I'm making a resumption, have suffered from some physical discipline from their parents without, you know, and that was considered reasonable And so this, Mr. Garcia, you know, did not cause his child any bodily harm. He did strike her, but he caused her not any bodily harm. So 2413 is actually a restatement, as I mentioned, of the common law, which I think is appropriate for the court to use that standard, perhaps more ideal for the courts to have cited the 1903 case than the actual common statute.
Is there any conflict between 2814.13 and the common law and the abuse statute? Why do we have to think about this? Think about 2814.13 or the common law standard, unless there's some conflict between that and 1493.
I don't know the legislative history of why we enacted 2814.13, but from what the case law says, and I don't think there's anything that's contradicting this, there was a appellate court case as well, but there's a Supreme Court case coming across from Christian Torres Home, which says that it is a restatement, it seems to be almost a complete restatement, probably better articulated under 2813. But it, dealing with obviously issues of criminal child abuse, 2413 would come into play, but there's no evidence contrary that the common law would not come into play under a civil standard. Under these proceedings of the
under 42903, abuse means, and it goes on attempting, and so forth. So, why do you believe that attempting is one of the ways in which abuse can be established?
Well, I think that if someone has a plot to harm someone, a girlfriend, for instance, they have a plot, let's say they pull their spark plugs or something, and or they cut their brake lines, and they're going to attempt to cause this way physical harm because they're going to get an accident and harm bodies. I also think, possibly an extreme rep might be someone taking a shot at somebody else. Their intent was to actually shoot them or maybe throw something at them. Their intent was, something like a hammer or something. There was actually an attempt to cause bodily injury.
That wasn't work under 42903 necessarily because it's with or without an instrument, right?
Right, with or without an instrument. So it could be with or without an instrument. In this case, Mr. Garcia's using his hand. But I think that we don't accept this for a long time. Think about attempts, given the fact that he actually did make contact with the child. And the court was reasonable in believing that, given this man's size, and the size of the child, based on the video, that his true intention was not to attempt to cause her bodily injury. Now, is it unsavory? Yes, it's an ideal pairing now, but nevertheless, it is, he did not cause her bodily harm. There's no evidence that he, in the end, attempted to cause her bodily harm, because I think he easily could have done that if that was his intention, based on upon circumstances in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We have Jack Reno. And this is Jack Reno. Our next case is the same.